Blog Talk Radio.
It's Paranexus Universe. It is Thursday, January 22nd, 2009. This is Doug Kelly here with Grant Roop and Dunstate Grant.
Hey, Doug, how you doing? Welcome, everybody. It's nice to have you with us tonight.
Yeah, welcome to the show tonight. We have John Warfield of DC Hauntings with us tonight, and he's got a longer name. We'll get to that in just a moment. We want to welcome everybody and encourage you to get in the chat room and ask questions, and if you have a call-in you'd like to do, we'd love to hear from you. The number is there on your screen, and I will put it in the chat room as well. It is 347-945-7799, so if you'd like to call in, we'd love to take your call. And just a couple of housekeeping items before we get into our program tonight. Just put the CPI course and CLPI course, the new leadership course, on special until Sunday. You know, the economy's killing a lot of people, and wanted to make it easy if you were thinking about getting certified either in the CPI or the leadership, for primarily for founders, but anybody can take it. They're both on Paranexus.org, but in order to take the advantage of the special, it's a 2-for-1. If you enroll in the CPI class, you can have a friend or another group member enroll at no charge. If you want to take the leadership course, the CLPI, Certified Leading Paranormal Investigator course, you can enroll in that one, and a friend can either take that one or the CPI course. So it's a 2-for-1 special. It's good through Sunday, this coming Sunday, January 25th, 2009, and it ends at 5 p.m. Standard, Eastern Standard Time. So take advantage of that. It's the best offering that we've done so far. And in fact, we even lowered the tuition on the courses in view of some of the economic issues we've been facing. We'd also love to have you as a member of Paranexus. If you're not already, visit Paranexus.org. And trying to build this, we're still working on getting the Paranexus Field Investigator Network up and going. We've got a number of things we're working on with that, so look for that coming up before too awful long. Let's get into our program tonight. We have John Warfield with us tonight. He's the Chief of Operations and Lead Investigator for Washington, D.C. Metro Area Ghost Watchers. He arrives to the D.C. MAG team after 20 years of military service. John spent those 20 years in the Navy as a hospital corpsman and a search and rescue medic, and also received an award from the President of the United States for heroism. After retiring, John completed culinary arts school and is an avid barbecue chef. He has been trained in psychic self-defense and inhuman hauntings. John, welcome to Paranexus Universe.
Well, thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah.
It's nice to have you with us, John.
So, John, you spent 20 years in the military.
Yes, I did.
And what got you into paranormal research?
Well, actually, when I was in high school, I believed I lived in a haunted location. We had a lot of, manifestations out there. The biggest thing we had was I heard crashing noises in the basement, and you could clearly hear glass breaking, and I went down there, and we couldn't find anything. A lot of times, we would hear hammering in the basement, and as I would come out of my bedroom to go to the basement stairs, the hammering would stop. I'd go back to bed, it would start again, and I'd come back, it'd be gone, and the cat would attack things on the stairs that wasn't there. So after those experiences, I joined the military and retired at 38 years old, And I said, you know, how many people get to retire at 38? And I said, this would be the perfect field for me because, you know, my interest had already been sparked based on my previous paranormal experiences.
That's great. So you joined DC Mag a few years ago, and tell us about your group.
Well, my group was actually started in 2002 by a man named Al Tias. He was the founder of the team, and he worked closely with the Atlantic Paranormal Society. And after I retired from the military, I contacted him, wanted to join his team. And he said, you know what, with your prior military leadership and background, I'll just turn the team over to you because I'm retiring. So he gave it to me in 2007. And I've been taking care of that ever since.
That's cool. So
how many folks did you have on the team when you inherited it, John?
That was the interesting part. When I inherited it, there was nobody left on the team because he had not been working with it that much at that point. So I pretty much had to start from scratch all over again. So I hired a brand new one on the team. Yeah. And I wasn't expecting that when that happened. So it hit me like a ton of bricks, but in the end it worked out. So we got it working pretty well.
Well, that's probably a good thing because, you know, it could be a real challenge sometimes getting some team members together, you know. It's not that there's bad folks. It's just that some people have a totally different idea about how to approach this, and we like to call them weekend warriors, and you really can't be that. You really have to be dedicated.
Right, and the good part is we did have a strong foundation and a strong, you know, background of history, so all I had to do was, you know, build on that history, and it worked out really well.
Well, that's good. So how many members do you have now?
We currently have 5 members. We're actually looking for a couple more with a little experience in certain areas like closed circuit television, hardware, software. We're looking for a photographer that can, you know, give us good professional pictures so we can have better documentation and stuff like that. So
yeah.
We've got 5 now. We're looking possibly maybe 3 or 4 more because we've pretty much our whole year is filled up already. And it's, you know, not even Halloween yet. And that's when everybody comes out of the woodwork and wants you to investigate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so here, put a call out. You know, if anybody's listening in the D.C. metro area and want to join a team, get a hold of John. Let's give him your website, dchauntings.com is where you go.
Okay.
And you've got some interesting stuff on there. Well, John, let's get into some of the cases, the most interesting and educational cases that you've been on. What comes to mind there?
The most interesting, everyone has a different level of, you know, interesting to it. But, you know, at one case, the Christmas attic, I had my hair pulled. And so that was interesting in that I got touched. And one place that we're doing right now on a current, you know, on a regular basis is Jordan Springs. And out there I saw shadow figures, I've heard voices, things like that.
Where's Jordan Springs?
Jordan Springs is out in Stevenson, Virginia. It's just east of Winchester, Virginia. And actually, if people want, we have cases open to the public there, and they're welcome to come out and, you know, check out those, you know, manifestations and things like that. But we just did our first one on January 10th, and nearly every single person that came had an experience. So they were a little concerned at first.
What's the history behind the place that you're investigating, John?
The history behind it was actually it started out roughly about 1600s when the Catawba Indian used it as a place for spiritual and physical healing. It had a sulfur spring right next to where the building is located now. So the Catawba Indians used it for a while, and then when the place was built, it was used as a Civil War hospital. It was also used as a monastery, and recently it was used for a place for alcoholism and like a drug interdiction center.
So it's an actual physical structure, a building? Is it like an old brick building? Or
It's an old brick building. It's 48,000 square feet on roughly about 220 acres of land. And now they use it as an event center. They use weddings there and things like that. And they recently were published in some wedding magazine. I'm not sure which one it was.
But wow, that sounds like a fascinating place to investigate.
It is. It's amazing. And they gave us the first investigation, they gave us the entire building, 48,000 square feet. And we actually investigated for 33 hours straight. And the experiences we had were amazing. I mean, I was seeing apparitions in the attic. I saw like a shadow figure in the attic that was about the size of a child. And I didn't see it directly in front of me. I saw it out of the corner of my eye. And every time I turned, it would leave. And I said, are you playing hide and seek with us? I said, if you are, could you come out? We'd like to meet you. And you hear that EVP says, come and get me.
Wow. And you
so
can listen to
it. Interactive.
And I just wanted to tell our listeners that you can listen to John's EVPs or the ones they've gotten on his website, dchauntings.com, and they're under audio.
Yeah. We had a kind of originally hoped to bring, you know, some of the EVPs here tonight, but, you know, the transition onto the Internet, sometimes it reduces the quality. So, you know, we want to bring you quality ones, and hopefully at some point down the line, we'll be able to bring you some better, you know, quality or have the capabilities to do that.
EVPs are just hard because a lot of them are pretty faint and they're mixed in with the background noise. And you can hear them if you listen to them on John's site, especially with headphones. You can hear them. It's just to try to get that over the radio is really
it's tough.
Previous experience. Yeah, we try.
Yeah, what I would recommend is getting some external speakers for a computer and stuff and turn it up and then you can really hear them.
Yeah. It works. So,
but John, tell our audience how did you come about getting that investigation, and what steps did you guys take in order to get that type of investigation?
I'm not sure how we got it. They actually emailed me, but we actually did one investigation at Wayside Theater, and up in that was outside of Winchester, Virginia, in Middletown. And I think they found out about the Wayside Theater that we did, and they emailed us and said, we'd like you to come out to investigate this building because they had so many staff members have experiences out there. And as soon as I saw the building, I said, we have got to go here. So it turned out to be a gem. It was, you know, impressive.
So you guys are doing like a tour type of thing for investigators there?
We're doing a one-year project where we bring in some public and, you know, and let them know, you know, how we do investigations, you know. Also, we teach about ethics, too, about, you know, we're not just some crazy group out there, you know, running around in graveyards doing stuff like that. So we teach them about ethics. We say, this is how an investigation works. And the staff there is offering them a sit-down dinner. And after dinner, I give a little lecture, and then they get to do an investigation with the team.
Well, that's good. So what night of the week does that happen on?
Well, it's once a month for the next 12 months. And at the end of it, we're going to gather all the evidence, review it, and they're going to do a video, and also they're going to publish it based on our findings. And it's interesting because we actually had some people who were, you know, really interested in the paranormal community, and they bring their recorders, and they've actually emailed us stuff, said, this is what I've found, and some of it's interesting. So the public's actually helping us find clues.
So when's your next, tour?
The next one is February 7th, and I believe the one after that will be March 13th.
Cool. So if anybody's in that area, they should go check it out.
Mm-hmm.
So talk about some of the different approaches you've taken with regard to equipment, things like that.
Well, the equipment I use, I'm really not looking. I see all these websites put up their equipment, and they're all doing the same things. And I'm actually researching new equipment. There's one out there called MESA computer, M-E-S-A. It's a multi-frequency energy sensor array. And I'm actually looking at it from an energy standpoint. How can we record energy, understand how ghosts use that energy, and then find a better way to detect it? Because I see so many people, you know, like a lot of my new team members will bring in a meter, an AC meter, and it'll just start going off, and they'll say, oh, my God, look what's going on. I said, well, what is your meter doing? It's like, it's going off. I said, well, what type of energy does it detect? And they go, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And so tell us about AC versus DC. Just so our audience knows.
There's so many theories out there. AC is a man-made current, and that's what runs through houses. And they run at roughly about 60 hertz. But also, they have tri-field meters, DC meters, and DC is more of a natural current. It's like the moon, electricity things, or moon, lightning, things like that. So I'd like the tri-field meters because it detects natural current by man-made current. But we do use the AC meters, you know, to find possible false positives and things like that.
You had also mentioned something with the UV light.
One of the theories is that spirits do not like UV light, and one of the theories is that they don't like that energy. It's sort of like us looking into the sun, and we, you know, it just can't take it. So if you shine these lights on, they're not very happy, and It's not very pleasant for them. And we've actually tried this technique in an old Civil War jail, and it seemed to work rather well because we sort of provoked him because we thought he was a very angry and, you know, negative person. And we used the UV light, and clear as day, he goes, get out of here. And that's on our EVP. We caught that on an EVP. So. And that's probably our best EVP that we've gotten.
And that's the one, get out of here?
Right.
Get out of here. Now, on that case, and just to make it clear for our listeners, you know, as far as provoking and confronting, that's the term I use. But there was a reason you did that. It wasn't just because you were bored and wanted to try to whip something up.
Right. Well, actually, our first investigation, we had one of our female investigators called a very bad name. And we actually got that on our audio, and people can look at that and, you know, make a determination as to what they think it is. But after we saw that, we went back there, and I told them I didn't appreciate them calling, you know, our investigators' names, and I provoked it, and then I used the UV light, and that's when I made it angry. And I look at it from a human standpoint. If I go yell at a small child, they're going to go in the corner and hide, and that's what they're going to do in death. But if I yell at an old Civil War prisoner, a prisoner in jail, they're going to fight back and get very angry with me, and that was my thinking, and that's exactly what I got.
So did you get out after they told you to get out?
No, we didn't even know about it until we got the EVP.
Right.
You guys didn't cut and run, huh?
No, we didn't cut and run.
You're just not paying attention to the spirits, Josh. So where was that location, the get out?
That was actually an old Civil War jail, and actually at this time they don't want their location to be known.
Sure.
So I can't give that one out, unfortunately. But it was a great case, and as soon as they do, I'll definitely make that public.
I was going to say, with that statement, John, that leads me to ask you, why don't you talk tell our audience why you won't release that and what that has to do with, you know, adhering to ethics?
Well, we released that because it was such a good EVP. And the one thing with ethics I want to teach people is, you know, one day we are going to be dead too. And if I'm doing the wrong things, we're going to have to answer to these people. And I don't mind provoking an angry person, but, you know, I'm not going to provoke an old lady who committed suicide because her child died, or provoke a small child who might have died. You know, I just don't feel right about doing that. I also don't do graveyards. I think that's unethical too, because that's a place, you know, where people are supposed to rest in peace, and I'm sure they're not resting in peace when I'm stomping around in the middle of the night taking pictures and asking questions. So I try to avoid stuff like that.
Well, I was alluding to the fact that you're protecting your client's confidentiality, and I think that a lot of folks out there, some of the folks that are thinking about starting a group or you know, maybe, you know, in the beginnings of it, need to understand how important confidentiality is. And maybe why don't you just kind of tell your audience why you guys feel it's important, because you just set a perfect example by protecting the person we were referring to in a previous investigation.
Well, this is something I actually want to do. Now that I'm retired, I want to do for the rest of my life. And if I'm going to these people and saying, oh, yeah, no problem, I'll take care of you, we won't make it known, and I stick it up on my website, they're not coming back. And they're going to be very angry, too. So I want to do this for the rest of my life. So I have to make sure that all the evidence we submit is as good as possible. And one thing, I can't guarantee that every single thing is a ghost, but if we're wrong, I will take it off the website, and I'll put up a statement, hey, we just got it wrong on this one. So I think if you put it honest to the public and do, you know, the things that you said you were going to do, these people will really like you. I think that's very rare in our society nowadays.
You know, I think that's an interesting point, too. You know, a lot of people have an ego, well, no, you know, we weren't wrong or whatever. I mean, it even goes with some of the very, very questionable pictures that are posted on many websites. But, you know, if you get something wrong, there's no shame in that. It's fine. Just say, hey, you know, we got it wrong. We thought wrong. There's nothing. We've all done that, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know,
people on the team. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. Yeah.
I was just going to say, fellas, the importance of ethics. I mean, you know, that's something that when we were spirit team and we moved into becoming Paranexus, that's something that we really embrace. And I see it as absolutely critical. You know, I mean, ethics crosses everything. I mean, when you're conducting an investigation with a client, anything that client shares with you, unless they tell you otherwise, is strictly confidential. and it's not released to anybody or any circumstances. I mean, how many times, I mean, you know, you may have happens, you know, you have to have a team member who, if you're going to somebody else's home, is going to respect their home. You certainly don't want somebody coming in there that's going to take something that doesn't belong to them. Or so, you know, it's so important, and I'm so happy to hear you say that, because, you know, there's some groups that, you know, haven't gotten to that point yet or don't realize the importance of it. They get kind of all caught up in being the weekend warrior.
But it also really, it helps me, because I actually submit resumes and references to a lot of these places. And Ellicott City, Patapsco Female Institute, that's a, you know, pretty popular place as far as hauntings go. Historic Georgia Springs, I mean, the owners of these places are giving me, you know, good references. So when I go to these other facilities, they see these buildings like, wow, they did a good job for them. These are probably legitimate people. So ultimately, in the end, I get better cases because I'm respecting these people.
That's cool, and that's a good thing. And here's an ethics-related question we got from Greg in the chat room. What do you think about groups that you haven't asked to review your picks coming out publicly bashing your evidence?
What was the question again? I'm sorry. I got to get back.
That's fine.
To the page.
What do you think about groups that you haven't asked to review your pictures coming out publicly and bashing your evidence?
Well, I try to tell them that I'm not trying to prove my critics wrong. I'm more trying to prove my supporters right. And I'm not saying 100% that, you know, this is a ghost, or like this is a ghost with an EVP. I just go out there and submit the evidence. And it's like, you know what? I can't convince everybody. Some people are always not going to like what you give them. So just submit it and say, you know, it's your subjective experience, what you think, and it just is what it is, you know?
Yeah, and that's a good attitude. Let's just take that a little bit further for the benefit of Greg and our other listeners. There's always going to be people out there who want to criticize and bash. I mean, we've been carried our brunt of it as well. And, you know, you can't give it any energy. It's not worth it. It's pointless.
Right.
Because one of the things I've learned in life, it doesn't matter how good you are, how right you are, how honest you are, how well-intentioned you are, some people are going to like you and some people are not going to like you. Mm-hmm. That's life. So when people criticize us, we just don't go, you know, we don't go there.
Yeah, well, we always try to take the high road, too. But, you know, I think, to that person in the chat room that asked that question, a lot of times these folks that are critical of your work are coming at you not from the perspective – they may not be coming at you from a scientific perspective or coming from a technically skilled perspective. They may be coming strictly from a belief system. We've had people that when, you know, several years ago that came at right at our jugular because we weren't sure about orb pictures. And they railed against us and said that we are the second coming of the Antichrist. but we seem to do okay. And I think that my point is that it's a belief system. It's where people are coming from. And that's one of the things you have to take in consideration. And you know what? If somebody criticizes your pictures, you know, they have that right.
Yeah.
And even if they are right, and I will come back and say, you know what, I didn't look at it from that perspective, and I said, you might be right, and I'll put up something on our website and say, hey, we got it wrong. And, you know, so I'm just trying to submit the most accurate evidence I can. And sometimes I might be wrong, sometimes I might be right, but I'll definitely admit it if I, you know, make a mistake.
And that's a great leadership quality too, by the way. And in that same vein, I'm trying to recapture my thought. It was fleeting here, but
it happens to the best of us.
Yeah, and me too. And it happens to the best of us. And so the point is that I know what it was. The thing that kills anybody in any internet group or on the internet, it's so easy to hide behind the computer, and it's so easy to forget that there are real people out there with feelings who are honest and honest-hearted and who are trying to do the right thing and not, you know, like John said, sometimes you don't quite look at it from the proper perspective. And when somebody points it out, you do, and you say, oh, yeah, how'd I miss that? You know, so.
I've actually had EVPs where I'm sitting at the front of the speakers and it sounds like one thing, and then you sit behind the speakers and it completely sounds something different.
Mm-hmm.
So it's so subjective about what it could and couldn't be.
Yeah, it is. And so, you know, that's one of the things that we're trying to do with ParentNexus too, is raise the level of education too in the field. There are a lot of groups out there, and you know, we're all trying to answer the big questions. You know, we're trying to find answers to the human condition and what it means. And unfortunately, we're not provided with answers. We don't have hard evidence. And so here we are in a field where there is no real objective evidence, trying to make heads and tails of what people are experiencing. So give people the benefit of the doubt. There's usually no ulterior motives in what people are doing. It's just a level of education. You know, we all are at different levels, and we all grow, hopefully. So, John, back to the UV light thing. How are you guys actually using that? What are you using, and how are you going about using that?
We're just actually using UV flashlights, and we actually do what I call a sweep, and where we'll go through a room and try to get a spirit into a corner, and once we get at that corner, then we'll start taking pictures and do a, you know, like a recording and see if we can catch anything. So you actually go from room to room with five or six flashlights in order to manipulate the flashlight so you can keep whatever it is, you know, is trying to run away from it, so you get it to a corner, and that's how we do a UV light sweep.
Hmm, that's interesting.
It seemed to work pretty well in that case.
So have you used Frank's box?
We actually, my assistant team leader, John Rossi, started using it recently, and we got some interesting things in there, but at this point we haven't used it enough to make a good, you know, educated decision on what it can't be, because all the sounds that I hear are normal sounds, but supposedly they're using it for a paranormal experience, and we've gotten names out of it, things like that, so.
Well, for the benefit of our audience who may not know what Frank's box is, why don't you tell them, John?
Well, Frank's box is pretty much a radio that switches from station to station. It doesn't tune in on any specific station. And as it's changing from station to station, certain words are picked up. And in theory, the spirits can use these words to make their own statement. So if you ask what your name is, you could say, oh, it's Phyllis Dillard, you know. And as it changes station, it'll pick out the P and the H or certain statements like Phil, Liss, and things like that. So.
That's interesting stuff.
So when you're listening to the recording, you can hear all the stations changing, but if you listen to it from a distance, you hear all the, you know, the sort of all the statements make up a sentence.
Interesting. So, investigations, what have your investigations led you to conclude, or maybe not even to conclude, but pointed you in the direction of? I mean, what do you feel you know better now than before you began research?
Well, as far as just routine stuff, I think as far, you know, as building a good team is, you know, basically I use my military background and just look for the most professional people you can find so that you don't look like, you know, another knucklehead group, like I said. But from a paranormal standpoint, I'd have to say the level of evidence gathering that we do. You know, sometimes in the past we would, you know, sit down, wait to have an experience, and then, you know, we do a 5-minute EVP session, and, you know, we'd probably get about 20 minutes of actual data on an investigation, but now we're recording all night long, we've got videos going, we got a closed-circuit television system, so we just load that whole building with evidence-gathering equipment, and then we take it back and review it, so.
Do you guys, I'm sorry, go ahead.
It's amazing because I have an 8 camera closed circuit television infrared system, and at Jordan Springs we did a 33-hour case, so that's 8 cameras times 33 hours of video to review, so it is rough. Or, you know, the review part is pretty rough, but as far as, you know, information that we gathered, we're just getting tons of more stuff now that we're, you know, we just became more experienced, so we're doing a lot better.
And I think we just had a caller, but they left. So if you'd like to call in and ask John questions, feel free to call in. I posted the number in the chat room, 347-945-7799. There's also a click to talk button there that you can use if you have a headset on your computer. You can dial in free that way. John, what's you guys' position on psychics? Do you use psychics or?
I do. My only, I mean, we're not at the moment, but I wouldn't mind using them because I think if you don't use a psychic, you're sort of throwing the tool away that you could use.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't use them in the aspect of if a psychic comes in and says, oh, yeah, John Smith's in the building. We're going to go on our website. Say, oh, it's haunted by John Smith. We have to have more evidence, you know, some objective findings, too. But mediums can sometimes lead you in the right direction, and that might make it easier for you to find objective findings.
And that's good. And, you know, and you're right. You know, it's very subjective, obviously, to use psychics, but they're a tool. I mean, and I'm not demeaning them in any way, but it is a tool that, you know, you need in your arsenal because we don't know all of the ins and outs of everything in the field. And you know, if they can shed some light, and they have in many cases. I mean, Hans Holzer, all he ever took to an investigation was an audio recorder and a trance medium.
Yeah, and pen and paper.
Yeah, you know, and it was amazing in reading some of his books, you know, the information that was obtained through the trance medium that was later validated. And that's happened to us as well. So it's a good thing. So what would you recommend to groups who are out there who maybe want to kick it up a notch or increase the education or the approach, or what would you recommend if somebody came to you and said, hey, we're doing this or we want to start doing this? What tips can you give us to make it work well?
Well, the biggest tips is education. A lot of people just get, like I said, they'll get these meters, not even know what the meters are designed for. And as soon as it starts, the bells and whistles go off, they think it's a ghost. It's like, no, it's detecting energy. There's no such thing as a meter that detects ghosts. They just detect energy. So I think it's education first. You know, understand what you're using, why you're using it. And the other thing is just be professional. You have to surround yourself with professional people, because if not, you're just going to be another one of these groups, you know, that run around in graveyards. And so you have to have a good professional team. And you know, I look for military background or law enforcement background, because these people have been trained to deal with a lot of these people and stuff like that, you know, clients and things like that. But professionalism and education, and once you get that down, I mean, you know, you can always get equipment and things like that. Anybody can do that. But definitely education.
Good. Well, we do have a caller, so let's go to our call line here. Welcome, caller. This is Doug. What's your first name?
Yeah, this is John Rossi from DC Mac. How you doing?
Hey, John. Good. Nice to meet you.
Hey, I just wanted to clear something up because I don't want people to come away with the wrong idea about the UV lights. We use UV lights as a defensive mechanism. And the person, the spirit that John was talking about that we had used it with, actually had basically had done a psychic attack on one of our team members. And in the sense that the team member was experiencing headaches and nausea, and it was just pretty clear that it was acting in an aggressive way.
Go ahead.
We don't just go out on investigations and use the UV light because, you know, again, it comes to the ethics thing, like John was saying, that, you know, we treat the entities that we deal with a level of respect. But occasionally, you run across one that's got the wrong attitude, and then you can respond accordingly.
And just to clue everybody in, if you didn't catch that, John Rossi is on the same team with John Warfield. You guys ever get called the two Johns?
Yeah, what gets
actually, we jokingly say in order to be on our team, you have to have a J in your first name.
Dang, now I
can't. What I want to know, guys, is does that ultraviolet light work on regular people? Because there's a few people I think.
I tried it.
Oh, darn, you know. Maybe a laser pointer then, huh?
Well, John Rossi, thanks for clearing that one up. And you know, that goes part and parcel with what we've been talking about too, you know, in terms of ethics. And you know, that's our position too. You know, we will confront spirits at times, but it's much the same way as we might confront a human being, because we don't view spirits and humans as any different. We're still entities. So, same thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I'd like to thank you for that, too. Yeah, I'd like to thank you for that, too, because that is a tool we carry around with us at all times in case there's an attack. And in theory, you know, if we are attacked, we could shine as light, and supposedly this entity will run away or leave, whatever it needs to do.
Well, John, thanks for calling in. Appreciate
it. All right,
well,
thank you.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, we'll talk to you again soon.
Nice
Bye-bye.
Talking to you, John.
All right, so we do have a question in the chat room.
Okay.
About staying overnight in a haunted place and see what they get during sleep. Have you guys ever tried anything like that? Let me see. Let me go back up a little bit. Has anyone ever had someone who's experienced with lucid dreaming and out-of-body experiences, you know, and staying overnight, seeing what they get?
Well, not on our team. That is one of the theories out there, that in a hypnagogic state you can actually experience more manifestations and things like that. But we haven't done that on our team specifically, because we're more of a gathering evidence type team. So we're trying to keep people awake, you know, so we could gather more evidence.
Huh. That's actually an interesting concept I hadn't considered, especially if you had somebody who was psychically sensitive, or like Sharon was saying in the chat, to you know, experience with lucid dreaming.
There's a lot of folks that feel that that's a time that the people who have crossed over will try to communicate, is during periods of sleep. There's some people that think that way. So that is a good question, in the sense that, yeah, maybe lucid dreaming, who knows? It may be a conduit to, you know, to the spirit world. We don't know.
Hey, John, on this case where you used the UV light, where there was a psychic attack on the member, was the member psychically sensitive?
She didn't claim to be at the time, but I try to tell my team members, if you get any headaches, nausea, anything like that, it's possible that it's a psychic attack. So you always assume the worst, you know, to defend yourself. So, but not at that time. They didn't claim to be.
Yes. Well, good. It wasn't a stupid question. That was funny. All right. So what else on your investigations? Tell us about the most compelling, if you haven't already, the most compelling investigation, most interesting, or dramatic.
Well, probably, like I said, probably the Jordan Springs one was, that's the place where we're gathering tons of evidence. We actually did one out at the old Crystal Caverns, where we actually got a full-bodied apparition. And that is not up on our website now, right now, but I'll put it back up, you know, tonight, so people, if they want to see it, they can look at it and make their own decision. But it was rather interesting. So
tell us about that haunted
cave.
Yeah, tell us about it.
Well, with Crystal Caverns, we actually did that when supposedly there were children that were down in the caves. They were actually digging for saltpeter to make gunpowder during the Civil War, and the cave collapsed and it killed a bunch of children. And we picked up some interesting EVPs there, too, and also apparently it's haunted by some Indians, too. And unfortunately, we didn't get anything in the cave that's that convincing, but we did get the apparition outside on Hupp's Hill, and that's supposedly, you know, extremely haunted. And that's probably our best piece of evidence as far as, a picture is concerned.
So what were the circumstances when the apparition appeared, and who was there, and tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I'm not familiar with, apparently, you know, it's a tourist site, so a lot of the tourists are coming through and claiming they see things, hear things. A lot of the staff, after hours when they're going through, turning out lights.
So nobody in your team saw the apparition?
No, we didn't see it at the time. John Rossi, my assistant team leader, took the picture, and he was having feelings like being watched, and I had the same feelings, and we just started taking pictures, and then when we, you know, developed them, we found them later on.
Oh, okay.
But I was actually out in the field, and I thought I saw part of an apparition. It was at a distance, and it was hard to tell, but it looked like, you know, from the trunk up, you know. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't sure, and I asked John Ross if he could see it, and by the time he got up over the hill, you know, it was already gone. So it was sort of interesting that I had, you know, thought I saw an apparition. Later we got one on a picture.
Have you guys done any residential-type investigations?
We actually got one coming up pretty soon that's going to be really interesting. I'm really looking forward to this one. I really can't get into the details of that one either until I talk to the clients. But we actually did one where the family was saying they were seeing apparitions, a child, a male in the house. And it was on some old farmland, and we got a EVP, and one of our investigators was asking, is your name Jody? And right after she said the name, you hear the name in the background, Jody. So, and also, when we first started to set up on the investigation, I was going down to the basement, and I heard somebody run up the stairs, and I thought, I was like, wait, we're going to the base, we're not going upstairs. So I came around the corner and said, who's upstairs? They said, nobody went up there. So I actually heard somebody running up the stairs. So
have you guys done any investigations where you haven't found a thing or have no reason to believe there was anything paranormal there?
We did quite a few of them. A lot of them were private residence cases. We had a couple public cases, and I'd rather not name them because they might, you know,
oh, yeah, don't
have some issues with that. So, but, yeah, a lot of the private residence. I have one child who they were so afraid of his house that they moved him out of his bedroom and into the brother's room. But the good part about that is, even though we didn't find anything, we actually, talked to him and educated him on hauntings, and I think he's back in his room now. He was a lot more comfortable with the situation. So if there was something there, it certainly didn't want to come out that night.
And that's good. You coach the mm-hmm. clients, you explain, because education trumps fear. We fear the things that we don't understand. And that's a good thing that you did. You coach the clients, teach them how to view the whole thing, teach clients to take their power back. Just because you may not be able to see it doesn't mean that it's going to hurt you, things like that. That's a good job.
And also go out of the way of, I don't want to tell any of these clients that it's not haunted. I'm just saying, we didn't catch anything that night, so if there is something here, it certainly didn't want to come out and speak to us this night. So I never say a place isn't haunted. I just tell them we don't find anything.
Well, in the opposite, I mean, that's so true because, I know this will resonate with you, John. We've gone on investigations where there's been absolutely nothing there, and it becomes quite apparent after being there and doing our investigation that what we're dealing with is a family or some individuals that have a very strong belief system, and the belief system may be based on something they learned in childhood, and that's the only frame of reference they have to, fill in the blanks for them. And a lot of times we've had folks that we've gone on investigations, nothing's been going on, but their belief system has really compelled them into thinking that there is something going on there.
Right. And also try to tell, if you tell them it's not haunted, they're going to start to think they're crazy. And then they're going to go see a psychologist.
Or they go shopping for ghost hunters after that, because that's happened to us as well. Where, we're the third group that's been out there.
Mm. And also try, tell the team, too, we need to be very careful with private residence clients, because if we do present evidence and we're wrong, they could end up selling their house based on the evidence that we find. So we got to be real careful with those.
And we wouldn't even get a commission.
Right.
Well, hey, John, here's a question from the chat room. Do you have any idea why a spirit would hang around the place where their death occurred, other than they don't know that they're dead, such as in that cave?
Well, there's a couple theories out there, and I have categorized them into four myself. It's they don't know they're dead, they have unfinished business, and are not going to leave until that's done. They just don't want to leave, or one of them is they're afraid of being judged by God, so that's the other one. So based on that, the reason why they hang around in a certain place is we just don't know at this point why it's happening. I mean, some of the theories out there is that, positive spirits are going to go to a place where there's positive energy, and that might be churches. Like I said, the Jordan Springs case, it was the Catawba Indians used it for a place of spiritual healing. Civil War Hospital, they used it for healing. Drug Interdiction Center for spiritual healing, and now it's for weddings. So it's all positive stuff going on there. So it might be that, positive spirits just like being around that positive energy. Negative spirits, so that's why you find, angry spirits in jails and things like that.
So do you feel that the client psychology plays a role or a big role in what they experience?
It absolutely does. I mean, for them, that's everything, And, even though I might not believe in their religion, that's still their religion, and they believe it strongly. They've been taught that since birth. And you're not going to change their mind. And that's why I don't want to, you know, get rid of any tool, because I would surely like a Muslim on my team or a Jewish person. So if we ever did a case like that, that, you know, these people can sort of coach us and tell us how to better handle the situation to make that client feel at ease.
That's good. Have you ever run across any so-called inhuman spirits?
Not as of yet. Al Pius did prior to coming on the team. He did some cases in Ireland, and he picked up on some inhuman spirits out at Leth Castle.
Cool.
But I haven't picked up any yet. It's a possibility, but we're just not sure. So, but some of the evidence is just so subtle, it's hard to tell if it was inhuman or not.
So where do you see your group going in the future? Which, what are your plans, your goals?
Well, we've got a couple of them coming up. There's a Point Lookout Lighthouse wants to come out and do some stuff for them. Like I said, the Jordan Springs will be doing for the next year. There's a couple taverns around that are asking us to come out and do their stuff. We also, Discovery Channel, we're doing possibly doing some work with them. We've already taken them on investigations, and they're thinking about, you know, possibly doing a project with us. I'm not sure if it would be TV or what it might be, but they're sort of interested, might, you know, pick us up for a project. The other thing we're doing is we've been asked to be consultants for a movie called Ghosts Don't Exist. It was directed by Eric Espejo, and one of the producers is Chris Cooley. He's a pro tight end for the Washington Redskins in the past. So they've asked us to come out, you know, and just teach.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that last part again? Teach them?
Yeah, just teach them how investigations are done. I'm sorry, that's somebody trying to call me, but we try to teach them how investigations are done. So we already brought them on a case, you know, to sort of show them what we do and how we do it. But now they're doing, you know, picking up the cast right now, and we're going to teach the cast how to do investigations so they can
that's
be more,
good.
You know, ready for their movie.
Huh. So what is your, I mean, what do you want to contribute to the whole paranormal field? What's your personal goals and objectives? What would you like to accomplish as you do your research?
My biggest goal is just provide more evidence. I know for a fact, you know, in my lifetime, I'm never going to prove the existence, you know, of the afterlife, at least not to convince everybody. But I just want to present more evidence, but and also let the public know, and anybody who might be wanting to become a paranormal investigator, that just be professional, respect people's opinions and things like that, and just don't go around trespassing and going into graveyards. I want to, you know, present education, professionalism, and respect.
So what things do you guys have on your team that, as far as your standards and protocols or membership requirements, that you put in place to try to achieve that professionalism?
Well, the one thing, I'm just looking for consistency, and I want everybody to be on the same page. And one of my requirements, and I think I told you about it last night, is that I'm requiring everybody come on our team to do the Paranexus course, at least the basic course. So that way, if we all have that basic knowledge, then we have sort of have an expectation of what each person is on the team for. I think a lot of groups just bring what they want to the team, and they're not on the same page. So everybody's all over the place, and they're not, you know, unified. So I like that. We also require a 5-investigation training process where you, you know, do the Paranexus course, and then you do the 5 investigations, and then you're qualified as an investigator.
That's good. And, you know, as you were saying earlier, it's hard to find committed members and long-term members, and that's, I think that's probably true across the board. So many people come into this, you know, having basically been educated on TV about what's done, and then they find out that you have 33 hours times 8 cameras of evidence to review. Do you think that impacts anybody?
It actually impacts about 90% of the people I bring onto the team, and I have such a high turnover rate, and I tell these people coming in, I'm like, listen, it's not what you see on TV. It's like you're in cold, dark places, up 33 hours straight. You know, it's miserable sometimes. You're not going to be happy. And I tell them, you're going to review the evidence afterwards. I said, you know, most of the time, you're not going to have an experience. The people that hang out for a long time that have the experience. And one of the tools I use, I tell them about, you know, if you go to the beach and start digging for treasure and don't find anything, and walk home, you know, you're never going to find anything. It's the people who do it for 20 years at a time and keep digging and keep doing research that are going to find the treasure.
Good analogy. Mm-hmm. Well, here's a question from the chat room. Have you ever used dogs in investigations, considering that some animals have the gift to view and sense things we can't see?
No, we haven't. And one of the reasons is they really can't provide us with a good, you know, subjective point of view from them. And the other issue is private residence cases. You could have people, you know, allergic to dogs. If you bring a dog in a case and they have a cat in the house, God knows what's going to happen. A lot of these old Civil War buildings, there's a lot of, you know, very valuable, you know, antiques in these places. So I just completely took dogs, cats, and whatever it is, I took them out of the picture. And so that's just too much of a hairy area.
and we don't. We do the same thing. We wouldn't do it. It's a good question, but you know, I think it's better directed towards the people that are in the home, because when we do our preliminary, or what we call a preliminary investigation, John, we ask them those kind of questions.
Yeah.
Do you have pets in the house? And, you know, have your pets had any reaction? And
right.
You know, so we can kind of get it that way without having to bring a dog in, because that's. I have no doubt that animals are very sensitive to those sort of things, but, yeah, it's just not always appropriate to bring a dog into somebody's house.
Right.
But there might be. You know, it depends on the dog, too. You know, it depends
Absolutely.
On the whole circumstance. I mean, that might be a tool that could be used on a specific investigation for a specific reason. You know, it's just one of those things, and that's the way we have to be. We have to be open-minded to the point where we can think fresh and in new ways. Because you never know where you're going to hit on some gold, you know, like your sand digging, your beach analogy.
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, it's good thinking. And that's the kind of thinking we need in the whole field.
And I guess the real bottom line is if you had a dog that was well behaved and you wanted to bring, and it was, you thought it was sensitive, ask your client.
Yeah.
Get your client to sign a waiver or whatever, you know, if the dog does any damage or whatever, you know.
Yeah, do you have a comment, John?
I lost my train of thought on that one, so I apologize.
No problem.
It'd probably be a good idea to call the person you're going to investigate, especially if it's residential, if you want to bring your St. Bernard along.
I actually worked with search and rescue dogs when I was doing search and rescue, and so some of the time, these dogs aren't even interested in what they're doing. They're over the corner sniffing and doing whatever they're doing, and they're clearly not working on the case, so sometimes if the animal's not interested, they're not going to do anything.
Yeah, yep. That's true. Well, you have the experience, yeah. Interesting stuff, interesting questions, interesting experiences you've had, and I'm sure you'll have a lot more as the months and years go on, so that's good.
I've only had, you know, roughly 2.5 years of experience right now, and I've talked to people who have 15 years, and I'm like a sponge when they talk. I mean, they just have so much knowledge, and someday I'll be there. I just got to be patient, do the right thing, and it'll come.
Yeah, and it sounds to me like you guys are doing the right thing. I mean, you're trying to be professionally, and that's so, so important, not just go and invade a location and hope that you'll run into a, you know, an apparition, but go and document what's going on. So it sounds to me like you guys are approaching it the right way.
And, you know, when you approach it that way, it leaves your mind open, because I think that, and I'm sure you'll agree with me, Doug, not like we're the seasoned veterans of a million years of research, but I think the more you do it, the more the group will tend to evolve, and your philosophy may, you may find, becomes a lot more flexible as to what you think may be going on. So it's one of those things where not only will you grow and evolve as a person, but your group will as well.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah. Well, cool. Well, we're coming up on the end of the hour and the end of the show tonight. We're doing a 1-hour show, and I just wanted to put out there before we sign off too about the Certified Paranormal Investigator course and the Certified Leading Paranormal Investigator course, two courses on Paranexus at paranexusacademy.org, and through Sunday, this coming Sunday, January 25th, 5 p.m. Eastern, you can get a 2-for-1. You know, as I mentioned at the outset of this program, the economy's been tough, And I know a lot of people would love to take the course. Well, now's your chance. You get two for one. If you want to, if you've already taken the CPI course and you want to get do the leading course, leadership course, it is a full-blown leadership course in a paranormal wrapper. And honestly, you will not find a leadership course anywhere near it for the money. And that's just a fact. I've been teaching leadership for years and years and years. So it's something that's unique and it's just not available anywhere else. So you can take that one and you can have a friend either take that same course or the CPI course if you enroll in that one. It's the same course of equal or lesser value. So go to paranexusacademy.org. All the details are there. And that's through Sunday, so take advantage of it. John, we really appreciate the time you've given us tonight.
Well, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
It's a real pleasure, and it's always nice having another colleague on the show. And at Washington, what a great place. I envy you, John. There's got to be about a million places there to do investigations. It's so rich in history.
Absolutely. If you're ever in the area, come on a case with us.
Oh, we'd love to. Thanks. Mm-hmm. So nice meeting you and talking to you tonight.
Yeah.
Nice talking to you, too.
Yeah, and we appreciate our listeners' time as well. We will send out in the newsletter our guests for next week. We've got several guests in the works to be lined up, some on time travel. Where's some of the other? Tesla and his...
Yeah, Tesla and Brad Steiger is going to be coming up in a couple of months, and we're working on some more exciting hosts. So it's going to be a real potpourri. It's not going to just be about alien abductions. We're going to really kind of stir it up a little bit.
Yeah, and a lot of interesting topics. So we appreciate everybody listening to the program each week. Thanks for taking your time, and we will talk to you next week. Thanks so much, and have a great night. Good night.
Have a great weekend, everybody.
Sky. It's Paranexus Universe.